Welcome to Hot Weekly.
Everyone, I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this is Haunt Weekly, a weekly podcast for the haunted attraction haunt entertainment community. Whether you're an actor, owner, or just plain aficionado, we aim to be a podcast for you. And we return again, this time, hopefully, not to depress the hell out of everyone.
Hopefully. We're not doing the news, so, you know, that helps.
These last few episodes have felt like we've been watching BoJack Horseman. Funny, but ultimately soul-crushing.
Yeah.
In a very, very introspective kind of way. Yeah. Hopefully this episode will be a little different, though, and it will all be filled with relatively good stuff in it.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as I get done with a sneeze, that is inevitably going to come out of my mouth and will not be edited out, because what's editing? that's your sneezes don't come out of your mouth. That's problem one.
Right.
But anyways, regardless.
Now that you've talked about it, it's gotten shy and ran away.
Really, it's hidden. It's all microphone shy. Mm-hmm. I can't be... camera shy. Ah, there it is. Beautiful. Funderbar. Okay. This is Haunt Weekly, by the way. If you intended to listen to Haunt Weekly, may God have mercy on your soul. You have made questionable life choices, but we're glad to have you. You can find us at hauntweekly.com or Haunt Weekly on Twitter, Haunt Weekly on Facebook. tinyurl.com/hauntweekly is our YouTube channel. Where you can get all the previous episodes neatly organized for you. We're also available on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, anywhere else podcasts are distributed. Now, before we jump in... No, this week's topic is... Actually, before we jump in... No, we haven't even jumped in at all. No. This week's topic is an interesting one for us, mm-hmm. because this was actually suggested originally by Maximus Christian O'Brien, who we'll give another thanks to in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And his idea, well, he had actually sent a whole laundry list of ideas.
Yes, and we will get through as many of them as possible over time.
Yeah, and I assume we'll probably be picking up most of them after the new year.
Yeah.
But one of them we really loved right off the bat and just really took a shining to, and that was the idea of unique things we've seen in haunts.
Yeah.
Now, we talked a lot about a lot of these things separately and, like, piecemeal in various podcasts, but we're combining them here, throwing in some ones I don't think we have discussed here.
Right.
And pulling together, hopefully, a very different list of things. I don't know how many we're going to get through. We've got up to 10 listed, but honestly, we don't know how many it's going to take in 50 minutes.
Yeah, this is one of those episodes that could go off the rails at any moment. So, you know, like every other one.
Yeah, about to say, how's that different from every other? But first things first, we have to get through our conference reminders. Okay. Crystal, this is an odd episode. Yep. Kick us off.
January 25th through the 27th, HauntCon, Halloween, and Party Expo here in New Orleans at the Ernest N. Morial Convention Center. It will be featuring us. We're going to probably have a before show and maybe an after show if people are still around.
Yep.
Something to do with us. And Jonathan is speaking on copyright and trademark.
Yes, I will be doing my copyright and trademark talk. It will literally be on the first day, that Friday, the 25th, the first session.
Yeah.
So, don't get too drunk the night before and come see me.
Oh, yeah, on the bus tour? Yeah, right. Yeah, don't do that thing that you're definitely going to do.
Yeah, I'm not an optimist right now. No. I'm not going to lie to anyone.
So, HauntCon.com for more info on what's actually going on the haunt, not what's going on with Jonathan.
Yes, please don't drink much. So you can come and sit and talk about copyright and trademark. Oh, God, what did I do?
Yeah, don't come to New Orleans drink. Yeah,
you
that's
don't want
not
to drink
work.
In New Orleans? You want to hear me talk? Oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord. All right, after that, February 23rd and the 24th, it's HauntX, the Haunters DIY Expo in Pomona, California at the Fairplex. They'll be touring Coffin Creek, both lights on and lights off. And there'll also be a costume ball, HauntX.com, for more information.
Okay. February 27th through March 2nd, it is the Maize Corn Party in Dallas, Texas and Oklahoma City. It'll be in Weston, Dallas, Fort Worth Airport Hotel, touring various mazes around Dallas and Oklahoma, including Yesterland Farm, Mainstay Farm, and more, themaze.com.
Yep, and that's Maze Like Corn for anyone.
Yes.
And finally for this episode, March 21st through the 24th in St. Louis, Missouri, it's Trans World Halloween, an attraction show at the America Center, co-located this year with Trans World Christmas Show.
Mm-hmm.
For reasons.
Well, you know, we may get into that later this year. Maybe. Who knows?
No information on the bus tour right now, but it does feature a party at the City Museum on Thursday, a performance by Vampire Circus on Friday, and a Vampire Ball on Saturday. Learn more details at the Haas Show, HAASHOW.com.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Christmas, we actually just finished our yard display.
Yes.
People tell us every year. So you're going to do something for Christmas, right?
Yeah, do something for Christmas. Yeah, do something for Christmas. Do something for Christmas. All right, bitches.
Yeah, we'll post pictures. We'll post pictures of it.
What you fucking wish for.
On our Facebook page. Haunt Weekly on Facebook.
Yeah, Haunt Weekly and Haunt Weekly on Twitter.
Watch for those later this week. Because, yeah, they asked for it.
Yeah. And then that's like the thing. So it's like, you know, we do all the stuff for Haunt. We have the full big yard display, the haunted house, queue line, everything we do, all big, almighty, go all out, make ourselves bankrupt.
Yeah.
And then everyone's like, oh, you got to do something for Christmas. You got to do something for Christmas. And it's like, dude, I'm burned out.
Yeah.
Even if I were like a huge Christmas fan,
mm-hmm.
I need like 3 months of 12-pack. I need 3 months of sleep, a 12-pack of beer, and
yeah,
probably some Quaaludes at that point. I mean, I'm done.
Yeah.
Don't talk to me for a minute. But no, we did a Christmas display.
Yes. And we haven't talked about this, but now I'm putting it out there.
Oh, God, so. Help us all.
If you recognize the box from the Christmas display.
Oh, yeah.
And if you are the first person to write us and correctly identify it, then maybe we'll send you something.
We have Bernie Baxter shirt still.
Exactly what I was thinking, but I was going to leave it as a surprise.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows?
It might be that. It might be something else.
So we'll figure it out. We got to get some swag.
Because we've only
got
like four of those shirts left.
Yeah. But anyways.
And they're in high demand.
I don't know about that.
Well, apparently we didn't give them some of our actors, and that's who we ordered them for.
Well, mistakes were made.
Yep.
Anyway, once again, this idea came from Maximus Christian Bryan, a friend of the podcast, mentioned him a few times, longtime listener, and often recurring idea submitter person.
Yes, very active on our Facebook page, too.
Which we love.
Yes.
Now, excuse me. He sent us an idea to talk about unique things we've seen in Haunts.
Mm-hmm.
And according to him, this is more his language here, it said include scenes, props, you know, lines from actors, costumes, things like that. And thought immediately that was a great idea.
Yeah.
Or else we had not actually done an episode like that.
Right.
Now, here's the thing, though, about us. You might be able to submit the idea.
Mm-hmm.
And we might do the idea, but we have to set the rules.
Yeah.
Because without rules, life is chaos.
Chaos can be fun, though.
Yeah, well, not in podcast, lady. This is a structured, orderly, by-the-books podcast that we'd have no shenanigans or tomfoolery.
We stick to a script every week.
Every week we do not go off the rails. We do not have long diatribes, but how we stick to the rules that make no sense.
Yes,
we do not overplay our jokes until they become unfunny.
Well, I don't.
Ooh, Jesus. All right, so Jesus Christ, the rules we're playing by. If you've ever seen the YouTube series Extra Credits, well, if you haven't, you should check it out. They're really, really good. They discuss video game development.
Right.
And even if you're not like a video game developer or mm-hmm. even think you're interested in this topic, it actually is a really interesting subject.
Yeah, we've mentioned them before for their things on story, which they did a whole series about how to build up story, which can be translated into haunting.
Absolutely, any medium.
So. Mm-hmm.
But they have a sub-series called Games You Might Not Have Tried.
Right.
And basically what they do is, like, every couple of months or so, they sit down, they come up with a bunch of games that game developers might not have tried.
Yeah.
But they should. And the rules, in general, are there, one, no particular order.
Mm-mm.
You know, basically, we just took a deck of ideas and shuffled them and tried to put them in some format that made sense in a podcast. This ain't a top list, is what I'm saying.
No, not at all.
We're doing one per haunt.
Mm-hmm.
This time around. So some of these haunts definitely have multiple things we could throw out.
Yeah.
And so there may be future episodes of this.
Right. Yeah. Because there's definitely one that I've would like.
And we're not necessarily saying everything that's unique is good. Mm. Now, everything on this list we remember pretty fondly, to be honest. But
yeah.
But we're not necessarily saying it's good or something that you should do in your haunt or something that should be in every haunt. God help us, that'd be
no,
tragic.
No, because then it wouldn't be unique anymore.
Exactly.
I mean, the whole point is to do something different.
But it's something that can be learned from, and it's a spark of creativity that oftentimes we don't see.
Right. And one of the things, while trying to come up with this list, I think that became fairly evident was we're pretty generic.
Yeah.
As an industry. It was actually fairly difficult to come up with enough things to talk about.
Well, and one of the things, like, we visited a lot of the major haunts in the world. Yeah. And, like, I love Netherworld to death. It was an amazing haunt.
Yeah.
And what I loved about it, and what you loved about it, and the thing we talked about this both in Garbatar and here, mm-hmm. was it is like a walkthrough history of haunting.
Yep.
You see everything from the latest and greatest in haunting to just good old-fashioned banging on sheet metal with a club.
Yeah.
You see it all, and it's so wonderful, it's so amazing, and it's used to such great effect.
Mm-hmm.
But there wasn't really one particular thing, I guess other than the giant talking tree
yeah.
in that room, that like really stood out as something I had never seen anywhere else. It was the application of all the things.
Right.
So if we're drilling down to just one thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You kind of have to take a different perspective, and that's kind of the idea, though we sort of break that rule with our opening pick.
Right.
But to be fair, it's for a good reason.
Mm-hmm.
Our first pick is Raven's Grin Inn.
If you didn't see that coming somewhere on this list,
just check yourself.
Just go back and listen to episode 87,
yeah.
and you'll find out why we love it.
And we were torn between how to describe the one thing. You could either say it's Jim Warfield,
right,
who is truly a unique individual in every context of the word.
Right, and he is there through the entire haunt.
Yeah. Or it could be, like I was thinking of it, the format.
Right.
Because Raven's Grin Inn really pushes the boundaries of what is and is not a haunted attraction, in my mind.
Yeah.
But in a way that's positive. Unlike a lot of these, you know, extreme haunts and torture porn experiences.
Yeah.
Like, you know, think like McCamey Manor and so forth, that push it in a direction that I don't think we need or want to go into.
Yeah.
This expands it.
Right.
It broadens it.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing about Raven's Grin Inn. If you're unfamiliar with it, it's in Mount Carroll, Illinois. It's northern Illinois, about 3 hours west of Chicago, if you were to drive straight from Chicago. In our case, it was about 5 hours north from St. Louis.
Right.
That's a lot of goddamn corn.
Yeah, it is.
That's a lot of goddamn corn. But anyways, it's a 52-a-week-year haunt. It takes Wednesdays off, but other than that, it's pretty much 365.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the season, most of the year, it's just one person. It's only during Halloween season there's actually a staff brought in to really provide assistance.
Mm-hmm.
And that one person is Jim Warfield.
Yes.
And describing the experience is one of the most difficult things I've ever had to do. And I am a professional writer.
Yeah, you know words.
People pay me to write things for them, mm-hmm. and I struggle with this. Because it's part haunted house, part spooky ghost story time,
mm-hmm.
part lots of time spent with crazy person. And basically, it's a wild adventure. The thing I would liken it to as close as I could, it reminds me of those Hardy Boys novels and things where they would explore the crazy old house.
Yeah.
And all this batshit stuff would keep happening, and you're like, that could never happen in a house.
Well, apparently it can.
This is that house.
Yeah.
This is the house from every Scooby-Doo episode,
Yeah, there are secret passageways. There are slides.
And I literally can't spoil anything, because I can't pick out, like, one or two things to really hone in on.
No. If you haven't gone through and you get the chance to go, be sure to look and try to figure out where you're going next as you're going through, because that's one of the things I always do. I couldn't tell. Nope.
And never forget while you're in there that Jim and his wife
mm-hmm.
live there.
Yes.
It is actually a house.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how.
No.
But it is.
That would be a fun way to get up in the morning. You know, go down into the cellar.
You know, but it is absolutely insane experience, but it's the format of it that makes it so unique. Mm-hmm. I mean, in our case, we went in an off night in the middle of summer.
Yeah.
Like a Tuesday night, random Tuesday, I think it was, in the middle of summer. And we were the only two people who showed up.
Yes.
And we had actually communicated with Jim beforehand, which if you, mm-hmm. part of Hunter's Hangout and part of those types of groups, you've already probably seen him.
Yes.
But we communicated with him before, and he knew we were coming. We ended up getting a 3-hour tour, but unlike Gilligan's Island, we didn't get crashed on a desert island afterward.
Right.
Instead, we were stranded in Mount Carroll, Illinois, which wasn't significantly more technologically advanced, but... My apologies to the lovely community in Mount Carroll, Illinois. But yeah, so... But it was a very wonderful experience, and like I said, it's the format of it, it's the boundary pushing, it's the genre-defining nature of that format. Basically, he takes you, he tells you stories, he campfire-y stuff,
mm-hmm.
and then he takes you on a tour of the house, and it is actually a tour.
Yeah.
Room to room, things happen, he disappears for a bit, he'll come back, mm-hmm. you'll wander down this, you'll go through there, you come up here, it's insane.
Yeah.
It's like I said, it's a Scooby-Doo house.
Yeah.
But my God, is it awesome, and it is an actual tour. It's unlike any other haunted attraction I've been to, and it's because of the format, and it's because of the persona of Jim.
Yeah, and I think that it would be the most unique place that I've been.
Mm-hmm. Oh, hands down, it's the most unique haunt I've ever been to.
Yeah.
I've never been to anything remotely like it.
So there, I think that that's what makes it unique, is that it just is unique.
Well, this episode is over. Thank you for joining us this week.
We've still got other haunts to talk about.
What are you talking about? We just finished it. We just won.
Well, then you should have put it further down in the list.
That would have been the smart thing to do. But I didn't do that. Okay, so let's move on. Let's talk about the 13th Gate.
Yeah.
The esteemed haunt out of Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And specifically, it's Pumpkin Path.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the thing. 13th Gate has sort of a reputation, you read the reviews online, of not being the most aggressive haunt. Everyone, including us, is gaga for the set design.
Right.
The attention to detail, the Hollywood quality sets everywhere.
Yeah. And they do pick some interesting and unique themes for the haunt mm-hmm. industry
yeah.
to include in their haunt.
Yeah. They do. They do a lot of very interesting things mm-hmm. inside it, but we're always gaga for the set design.
Mm-hmm.
We're always gaga for the time we get to spend in there. It's a good deal of a haunt
right.
in terms of how much time you spend and how much you get for it. But they're not known as being the most aggressive scares.
Right.
Most rooms have scares, but they're not constantly trying to pound you. They're trying to give you time to take in the atmosphere.
Right.
And it's always created a problem, because like some people online are like, oh, they're not scary. I'm like, well, that's not the only point.
Yeah.
Were you entertained?
Yeah.
I don't see how you couldn't be.
Yeah, I know.
But anyways, there was one sequence in particular that unfortunately, as we say in New Orleans, ain't dare no more.
Mm-hmm. This is the first year it ain't there.
And then it was not dare this last season, and I got sad. But it really blew my mind, because it was simply... nothing more than hundreds, if not thousands,
mm-hmm.
of carved fake pumpkins.
Yes.
With lights in them, just everywhere. They lined the wall. You're outside.
Mm-hmm.
You're on a path. But they lined the path on both sides. They had them deep. Mm-hmm. Like they had them with depth, too, stacked up like little bleachers. They had them in an arch over you and the trees and everywhere you looked. You could stand in that, and if you did like a 360 camera shot,
yeah.
you would have pumpkins all around you.
Yes.
Completely encircling you.
Mm-hmm.
And they would tune... usually, they would have them time the light show to sing along with This Is Halloween and The Night Before Christmas.
Oh, that was the last couple of years. Before that, we would walk in and you would sing it.
Yes. I wonder if you watched the video of me doing that.
It's like, well, we gotta put the song in for
God
Jonathan.
God damn it. Gotta pay that ASCAP fee on that one.
Mm-hmm.
But in all seriousness... it was an amazing thing. It was about 100 feet long or so. Mm-hmm. And for most of the years it operated,
yeah.
no scares.
No.
Nothing. It was just meant to be something to put you in a sense of awe and wonder.
Yeah.
It had no scares. It had nothing particularly creepy about it.
No.
It just made you feel like you were in a Halloween paradise.
Yeah. And you know, thinking about it that way, it would actually be a great entrance to the haunt.
Yeah.
Because it puts you in the mood for Halloween.
Yeah, definitely. If that had been an entrance to a haunt, because it looked like it could have been something straight out of the movie Trick or Treat.
Yeah.
Is what I immediately jumped to when I think of, like, movies it would fit in with.
Yeah.
Is Trick or Treat. It could have fit in perfectly there. But if, yeah, that had been the intro, that'd be up there with, like, the intro to Hell's Gate and other haunts, and just in terms of the magnitude and the scale of it.
Right.
And then the mood setup.
Right. And talking to them, most of those pumpkins, if not all of them, were carved by one woman who worked on them all year round.
Yeah. All she did is carve pumpkins, or these fake pumpkins, and they set up aside. Now, they kept a lot of the pumpkins this year.
Yes. They moved it to the outdoor.
They had, like, the swampy area. Yeah. And they set it up in, like, a display that you walked past.
Right.
So it was nice to see the pumpkins.
Yeah.
But I miss my pumpkin enwrapment. I miss being smothered in Halloween wonder. It was such an amazing and such a, frankly, Disney-esque feeling.
Yeah.
But like I said, it didn't come with scares. And I'm pretty sure that's one of the reasons why it was shunted in favor of other things.
Right.
Was they've been working to up their scare factor significantly.
Mm-hmm.
So, but still, it was such an amazing... It was really good then because it was also a palate cleanser.
Because
you would... It came right after a relatively scary sequence.
Right.
And then you'd run into that and you'd have a little time to catch your breath and ooh and ah. And then go into the next run, which usually was the swamp part.
Right.
So, still, absolutely unique. I have not seen anything like it in any other haunt.
Mm-mm.
And I that's one of the very few moments that made me feel that sense of wonder.
Yeah.
And that sense of love for Halloween in particular.
Yeah, and we don't put that into haunts often enough.
Mm-mm.
You know, something that just makes you go, aw.
Oh, this is pretty. This is awesome. You know, and it's such a unique scene.
Yeah.
Okay, from something that took years and years and years to make... to something that probably took an afternoon.
Probably.
Freaks of Fear, This is a Haunt Near Atlanta. The Bird. I have no idea what else to call it.
Yeah.
Basically, Freaks of Fear is a small trail haunt near Atlanta. It was actually not part of our original plans.
No.
When we went to Atlanta, we had no plans on going to it. It was not on our list.
We couldn't find it. We didn't know it was there.
But then we got information about literally while we were in the area.
We were at another haunt, and they said, are you going there? And I'm like, well, we are now. So.
Yeah, we had just finished our last haunt for the night.
Yeah.
And I'm like, hey, you going to go to Freaks of Fear? Who the fuck are they?
Yeah.
Google them, and then we get directed to the wrong place, and then we've got to take our Kia up this steep, muddy hill.
Yeah.
I'm just see a sliding, I'm right off of it. But anyways, we get there. And like I said, it's a small trail haunt. They had some really great front of house actors. I want to give kudos to them, too, because they conveyed the story. They really sold the characters.
Right.
And they acted like they were out of one of those carny horror movies. I mean, it was perfect. They were great.
Yeah.
But the actual haunt itself was clearly struggling with actors that night.
Right. And I think we may have gotten there after they had technically called close and some of them had gone home.
Yeah.
So keep that in mind. The reason was, even though we were there...
Still, within reasonable hours, it was raining.
Yeah, but...
Misting, I should say.
Yeah, and it... Yeah, it was problematic.
Haunts, yeah.
The weather was problematic.
I'm not blaming them.
It was a slow
This was an early October night, which I'm going to do this out of state trips.
Right.
But anyways, we're going through, we're enjoying it. It's just not anything in particular memorable at that point.
Mm-hmm.
It's a trail haunt.
Yep.
At one point, around the corner, look up, a giant bird-like thing comes from the trees way, way above us.
Yeah.
Swoops down, and I swear to God, I thought it was going to clip us.
Mm-hmm.
And literally, both of us kind of did the duck.
Yeah. Well, you have to.
It's a reflex. I mean, we both ducked, and then it whisked up to the other side. And I'm sure the damn thing never came within 5 feet of us.
Oh, no, not even 10.
Yeah. But it sure looked like it.
Yeah, because... Yeah, that afternoon that you're talking about to build that was spent climbing trees. Because that thing was way up in the air.
Yeah, oh yeah, it was way, way up there. But yeah, it swooped down and it startled us. Now, we've done a lot of trail haunts in the past. We've done a lot of different outdoor haunts. But I've never seen anything play with that vertical space quite like that.
Right.
I mean, we've seen, obviously, in indoor haunts, things try to come down on top of us. And so on and so forth. But it's so different to see something come from what was probably over 100 feet in the air and swoop down just what felt like above your head.
Right.
You feel the wind off of it as it passes you.
Yeah.
I've never seen anything like that before or since.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, it turned what was, at that point, not a super memorable experience, and the one we haven't shut up about. I think we mentioned this in one of the, like, when we're talking about having a hook for your haunt or a special moment.
Right.
We talked about that, I can't remember which episode it was, but we mentioned Freaks of Fear, that, because now that went from a haunt that would have just been one of the many we visited in Atlanta to the haunt we can't shut up about.
Right.
So, yeah. Okay, going back to Chicago. Statesville Prison and Hell's Gate, the intro sequence.
Yeah. And this is difficult to put both of these into one.
Yeah.
And to list this as the one thing for both, because both have other unique things in them.
Yeah. But it's worth talking about for a lot of different reasons. Both Statesville Prison and Hell's Gate are run by Zombie Army. Zombie Army also owns Hell's Gate.
Yes.
Zombie Army Productions also owns Hell's Gate, but they do operate Statesville, too.
Right.
Now, both use functionally the same intro sequence.
Yeah.
There's no other way to say it. You walk into a room, you're in a with about 100 other people, in lines, looking up, and a story unfolds above you and around you. I think I liked Statesville better in the execution of it.
And see, I disagree with you. I liked Hell's Gate better. And the reason I liked it was because there were more actors on the ground interacting to tell the story. And not all of the actors were up on the the second floor.
Fair enough. You know, fair enough.
Yep.
Also, a lot of it might play to where we were standing. I was at the front. I got shunted to the back.
Right.
But in both cases, it's a real wow moment.
Yeah.
It briefly relays the story that's going before you. Has a big gotcha. Try not to give it away here.
Yeah.
Do want you to experience it. And caps it off beautifully. Have we seen other people do things like this? Have we seen other people, you know, use 3D space fly above you and all these things previously? Yes. But never quite like this. Like, usually, when I've seen flyers and people up in the rafters of a haunt, it's something that you pass underneath.
Yeah.
Not that you are trapped.
Yeah.
And they are the ones that can, you know what I mean?
Move
around.
Yeah.
It's a different feeling.
It is.
But the main thing about it is, it's a great way to introduce the haunt, a great way to tell the story, and not screw up your throughput.
Yeah. Yeah, and that is part of the big thing of it, is that it tells you the story of what you're about to see and encounter, which is really nice. And once again, something that we don't see a lot of places is that detail to storytelling.
Yeah. And here's the thing. I mean, when we talk about haunt intro sequences, House of Shock always gets brought up. They're very famous for their stage show that they had.
Right.
The problem with the stage show was they could only do it four or five times a night tops.
Right.
It killed their throughput because they had to hold the queue line up and get everyone this massive bullpen to put it on.
Mm-hmm.
And long and short of it is, yeah, it was really, really a cool sequence, but you couldn't repeat it hundreds of times a night.
Right.
They could. Zombie armies can definitely be done many times a night.
Right.
Maybe not hundreds, but at least dozens and dozens, you know.
Yeah.
It's very effective that way, and it gives a very similar pop moment to it. So, yeah, it's something that's very unique, and I would say it's unique to Zombie Army Productions.
Yeah.
Because I kind of wish we hadn't done Hell's Gate and then Statesville Prison back-to-back like that on two separate days. We did part of the Lost Souls Haunted Bus Tour.
Which was awesome.
Which was great. Japes, you're awesome. And they're doing an Xmas one, too. We need a pimp.
Oh. So there you go.
Japes, we apologize. We just now remember that. Crystal will look up details on that.
Oh, well, fine. Throw me under the bus,
literally.
Well,
my TV's not working. But anyways, but they definitely have a style. So when we saw it the second time at Statesville, it was, I don't want to say less special, but it felt deja vu-y.
Yeah.
Okay, and there's no information on it. It's just coming out December 22nd is when it's happening.
Okay.
So that's all we know about the Lost Souls. Check out LostSoulsChicago.com for more information. But anyways, yeah, it was a very, it's a very unique intro style, and it's very effective in the way it's done. I wish more haunts would have sequences like this, because it also prepares you for the haunt. It gets you hyped. It gets you in the appropriate mental space for it.
Right.
Rather than just throwing into the first room.
Right. And it also helps break up groups and, you know.
Yeah.
There's a lot of practical reasons to do something like this.
Yeah.
It's entertaining. You're not, you know, you're waiting in a second line, but it doesn't feel like you're waiting in a second line. And not like second line New Orleans has.
Yeah, I know. I get what you meant.
I know.
Okay. Riseswell Asylum, part of Rise in Tickfaw, Louisiana. Touch done right.
Yeah.
Riseswell Asylum is a fairly basic haunt from a structural standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
It's done well, but it's just a basic asylum haunt. I mean, from that point, you've seen probably the same thing a lot, or very similar, a fair amount. What makes it unique is that they do touch very, very well. Riseswell is neither full contact nor no touch.
Yeah.
It calls itself a light touch haunt, but the way I think about it personally, it's more about invading personal space.
Yeah.
The contact itself is actually very limited.
Yeah.
Very, very limited. Usually to your hair and shoulders.
Right.
And you, and incidental, like I've Eskimo kissed several of the actors there because they get right in my face and the noses would touch. And
yeah.
But that's not really the same thing. Now, they do this because they're able to do this because they have a scene-based format.
Mm-hmm.
Very similar to the old JC-style haunts where you go room to room, a scene unfolds, you get to, you know, stand here, watch scene.
Mm-hmm.
But they do it organically.
Yeah.
They don't just have a guide. You
right.
know, okay, everybody come to the next room. Please stand against this wall and shut up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, okay, but to be fair, you do get led into the first room told to stand against the wall.
And shut up. But
yeah.
But it's done by a doctor who is actually in the scene.
The nurse.
Nurse in that scene.
Right.
It makes sense from a
yes.
character and story standpoint.
Yes, because she then takes your name. She checks off your name. She takes any
yeah.
other information you're wanting to give. It's
yeah.
always funny if people go with us, they're like, did you give them your real name? Yeah.
Yeah. They already know it.
And they're like, why did you do that?
Why did I eat the damn Tic Tac that one time?
I know. They stopped giving out Tic Tacs.
I know, because they probably found out, oh crap, Jonathan Lee didn't choke.
Yes.
Oh, God. They used to give out little pills, quote-unquote pills that were Tic Tacs, and
yeah.
I would freak out members of the group by downing it.
Yeah. It was fun.
It was. I became part of the story at that point.
Yeah.
Which is one of the things they encourage.
They
that
do.
Type,
they,
that type of interactivity.
Yes, they encourage you to change the script, to challenge their actors, to, you know, play along. And it really is one of my favorite haunts to go to every year.
And the trust they have in the actors is amazing because not only are they trusting them to have contact with customers,
right?
Admittedly soft contact or light contact, but they're trusting them to improv and play with
mm-hmm.
and engage with the customers and encouraging the customers to play back.
Yeah.
That's a skill very few haunted house actors have.
Yeah, because I do that and other haunts and try to throw people off and usually I'm successful.
Well, even if I just like try to play along.
Exactly.
Like there have been like the one time a guy came up and said, I'm going to put you in this here cage.
Yeah.
And it was actually kind of funny because that was the year we were building the cage
mm-hmm.
in our haunt. Like, wouldn't be the first time today.
Yeah.
And he went, dang, I don't know what to say to that and walked off like defeated.
Yeah.
Like, no, come on.
Yeah. Well,
But no, but here's the thing about it. We've been to a couple of extreme and four full contact haunts.
Yeah.
And I'm always more unsettled in Riseswell than those.
Yeah.
Because the extreme haunts, the contact feels forced. Here it feels organic.
Yeah. This is, you are part of a story and the interaction is part of that story. The touch
exactly.
is part of the story.
Yes.
So if, you know, like I'm going to describe the first scene again.
Okay.
And that way we don't give spoilers for the rest, but it gives a good idea of how the contact happens.
Okay.
So you're in the room, you're against the wall, the nurse is taking your things, your information. Patient breaks out. This is the patient because she immediately starts paging for the doctor,
mm-hmm.
you know, and having a shit fit that he's gotten out again and obviously
yeah.
he's not on his meds. Well, he comes up and he slams his hand right against your head.
Very
on
good
the
aim,
wall.
By the way.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it feels like riding ants. It's probably like a foot away.
Close enough.
But then it gets really close into your personal space and, like, play with your hair or sniff it.
Sniff you. And
yeah. And that kind of unsettling, that, oh, this person that's taking the information is panicking because this is out. The doctor is running in from the other area. So there's all this stuff going on, and you've got this person that you don't know in your space, and it just fits with the story.
Yeah.
It's not, oh, I'm going to touch you. I'm going to touch you.
I'm going to grab you now. I'm grabbing you and I'm shaking you.
It's not that.
It all fits within a narrative, and it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, if you've been listening to our news podcasts lately, mm-hmm. you know why maybe full contact ain't such a bright idea.
Right.
So, just saying. This is a good middle ground. And when it's done as part of the story, it's very compelling.
Yeah.
It's always the haunt I feel most at ease in locally every year. In terms of like, ugh, this is awkward and...
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Unease.
You know what I meant.
Yeah.
Like, uneasy. Like, ugh, like, the discomfort you're supposed to experience.
Right.
That's what I'm trying to say. I'm not saying it's unsafe or anything. Jesus Christ, it's perfectly safe.
Yeah.
But no, it's that uncomfortable feeling you're supposed to get from this environment.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never gotten that from a full contact haunt.
No.
I have been grabbed, I have been shoved, I have been carried off. I've had lots of things happen to me in haunts.
Yeah.
And I have never felt more ill at ease than there. And it's because of the way they use touch and the amount of touch they use.
Right.
And that's, like I said, unique.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, up next, Basement of the Dead, the Q Line.
Yeah, we've talked about this a lot since Halloween.
Yeah, we have. But one more time for those in the back.
Yeah.
I have never in my life seen a really, really long queue line that I wanted to be in.
Yeah.
They made waiting not suck.
Yeah.
I mean, damn you, better than VIP access of Lost Souls Bus Tour at LostSoulsChicago.com. Christmas one coming December 22nd.
Yeah, so you can get all your haunted Christmas stuff in.
Yeah, damn you, Lost Souls. But yeah, they had a DJ spinning, lots of great 80s and 90s tracks. They had stilt walkers, people with t-shirt guns, dancing zombie clown babes, and more. It felt like a party.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen just a DJ spinning and a queue line anywhere.
I think that could be, that's your one. That's your item. We're drilling down just to one item. It's the fact that a DJ.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing. That's taking the cue and doing it and elevating it from something that's a hassle you have to do to keep customers happy and making it a selling point in the damned haunt.
Right. And here's the thing is that, you know, a lot of haunts, when they do outside music, they do, rock or dark.
Specifically, it's usually Nine Inch Nails, Rob Zombie, and Marilyn Manson are your three bands.
Yeah, basically. But it was so interesting to see a bounce party basically happening.
It was 80s dance. It was...
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, is that a lot of people don't realize is that DJs take care to either amp you up or bring you down. And they try to play with that balance to keep the crowd going.
Yeah, it's going
to
work way better than your Spotify list. I guarantee you that.
Yeah. And it's not one note. Because, you know, they'll play something really fast and upbeat, get your heart pumping, and then really...
They'll get a sing-along song that everyone can kind of like chill and sing along to.
Exactly.
Yeah. It was such an awesome party. And here's the thing. We went, I think, like October 5th or 6th. Mm-hmm. I can't remember which one it was. But it was early October. It was the 6th. It was random Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And early October. They had a two-hour wait to get in line.
Yeah.
You know why they had a two-hour wait to get in line at that haunt? Because they made a two-hour wait not a chore.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's it. That's how you get a two-hour wait at your haunt. That's one of the things you have to do is make a two-hour wait not suck.
Yes. And to get a two-hour wait... And not have bad reviews all over about the wait.
Yeah,
because I've been to haunts with two-hour waits. We go to some every year. We always buy VIP to avoid that wait because we can't afford the time. But those haunts get bad reviews on their time.
Yeah.
If you go on their Yelp reviews and so forth.
Yeah. Okay. So anyways, next up, Waterloo Sportsman Club, Multiplying Shadows.
Yes.
This is more of a single scare type thing.
Yeah.
My God, did I love this when we saw it. This made me giddy with creative joy here.
Yeah.
Basically, the idea is this. You have a group of people, possibly a family, but possibly just a group of people of,
right.
of differing sizes, wear black morph suits, have one stand behind the other, with a stand from tallest to shortest or biggest to shortest or whatever.
Right.
So that way, when you look head-on, it's just one person.
Mm-hmm.
And then have them multiply.
Yeah.
Have the second one step out, third one step out, the fourth one, whatever. How many you got?
Yeah.
So this is some Peter Pan bullshit going on here, and I don't know what to do about it.
Exactly. We saw this, and it was freaking great. They used...
Dude, it's Puff Puff Pass, man. You didn't...
Yeah. So there was the obvious person that was there, and yeah, they were in
just
full...
in the black morph...
No, they weren't in the black morph suit. The front person wasn't.
Yeah.
They were just a scare actor who was going to come out at you. But then they didn't move, because their shadows did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was super creative. And my favorite haunt costume over the years, still to this day, is probably a black morph suit.
Yeah.
Working in a dark room, moving in a black morph suit, messing with people, is probably one of my favorite ways to be a haunt actor.
Yeah.
I know it's lazy and cheap in some ways, but it's so fun. And it gives you so many options of what you can do.
Mm-hmm.
But this was such a beautiful use of it. And this was a great use of kids.
Right.
Kids as scare actors don't usually work because as a kid you can't hurt me.
Right.
I can literally just pick my foot up and stomp you.
Yeah.
You'll be a little greasy spot on the trail.
Yeah.
But like that, it's actually really effective because the shadows keep getting smaller.
Yeah.
Brain's getting broke, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really, really, really good, and I had a great time with it. Mm-hmm. It's such a trippy effect, and it's so simple. Everyone has access to black morph suits. You don't need fancy costumes. You don't need fancy...
you don't need good actors.
No. Just as people with, like, an iota of, like, timing, as in they know to move after the person in front of them.
Yeah. Yeah, basically, timing and the ability to stand still for a few seconds.
Yeah. It really doesn't take that much actor skill to do this. Just, you're going to have to rehearse it some, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But, yeah, this is a great gag. And then, like I said, it was really original. I've never seen anything like it done. And I suspect one of the reasons is because it does require multiple actors.
Right.
And most haunts are, of course, trying to spread their actors out rather than bunch them up.
Right. But, you know, this is a family-run haunt. Lots of families work it. And I think one of the reasons it was so effective is because it was outdoors, that the shadows just looked like you were looking deeper into the woods until they moved.
Yeah.
They blended in with the background
perfectly.
It was
beautiful. It was so beautiful. There was a lot at Waterloo that was really very special.
Yeah.
And like I said, we actually had two or three things from them on this list, but that was the one we ran with for this one. If we do another one of these down the road, I'm sure you'll hear their name again.
Mm-hmm.
It's Waterloo Sportsman Club in Waterloo, Illinois, I believe it was.
Yes.
Anyways, okay, and our final one right now.
Okay.
Evil Intentions. Oh, wait, Crystal's thinking. Maybe not our final one. Evil Intentions, The Hellscape. Now, Evil Intentions is another haunt we could have pulled multiple things from. But we call this one The Hellscape because it's what we called it, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But it's basically a room where on three sides, the customers walk down a path,
mm-hmm.
where it's like up to 3 feet, it's a normal 36-inch walkway hallway there.
Right.
And then at about 36 inches up the side, or so about halfway up, it slants.
Right.
Over the customer's head. So it's very claustrophobic feeling, especially someone like me who's 6 feet tall.
Yeah.
And it's filled in with chain link.
Right.
And the center of the room, the bulk of the room,
mm-hmm.
is the hellscape, as we call it. It's a demon character with two sliders who have ramps to go up and down,
mm-hmm.
have a lot of play space in there, and can really get in customers' grills without touching them or risk of touching them, thanks to the chain link.
Yeah.
It is breathtakingly effective.
Yeah.
And it's such a risky design choice. From a pure design perspective, this is risky because typically when we talk about like hot room design, we say, okay, we want to minimize the actor area, the area the actor needs, and maximize the customer area.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you get the longer walkthrough. That's how you make the room feel bigger.
Yeah.
That's how you make it feel more impressive. This just said, fuck all that, we're doing the opposite.
Yeah.
And it reminded me of those zoos, like where you like drive around in like the little safari car, and basically it's like the people are in the cages and not the animals.
Yeah,
that's what it felt like.
Yeah, well, and it also had the effect of slowing down the customers going through, because you're gonna go slower so that you can, you know, you've got those reactions of running into the wall behind you because there's somebody coming and jumping on the fence in front of you.
Yeah, and bouncing off of it hockey style or whatever they're doing, whatever crazy stuff they're doing.
Mm-hmm. There were also bars across the top, I believe, where actors could get up and reach down.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they had other zones for that, too. That's a good point.
Yeah.
But the main thing about it was they had three people in that cage.
Mm-hmm.
And two of them were sliders, so they can get around real quick. At least the night we were there, two of them were sliders. It could be different on other nights.
Mm-hmm.
So they can get around real quick.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you had the demon dude who's walking at normal actor pace.
Right.
The main thing is, though, he's in this elaborate costume.
Yeah.
He's where your attention is getting drawn to.
Right.
Everyone's looking at the demon dude with the giant mask and the horns and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's focused on him. And these two sliders are just side to side, up and down the ramps, all up in this place, popping people.
Yeah.
And it's crazy, because once you start watching the sliders, you might watch one, but then lose sight of the other. And then
yeah, exactly.
They turned it into an actor's playground, which requires a ton of trust in your actors.
Mm-hmm.
It is absolutely mind-boggling how much trust that takes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a very, very cool sequence. And I've seen other actors' playgrounds, but none that were constructed quite like this. None that really caged the customer to give the actors a playroom.
Right.
Usually it's more of a, you know, everyone's in the same cage type deal.
Mm-hmm.
This was very unique in that regard. And it made even me feel claustrophobic. And yeah, it was very effective.
Mm-hmm.
Now, actually, we do have a couple of minutes. Do you want to do the last two real fast?
Sure.
All right. We did have two other examples to talk about real, real fast.
And I did think of one other
thing. Okay, what's your one other first? Let's do
that. All right, the one other thing. Eckerd's Miltstadt Fun Farm.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
There was a tiny little Uncle Somebody's haunted house that was fully automated.
Yeah.
From the time the door opened to the time you went through it, everything in it, all the little scares and everything, fully automated.
Zero actors. Yeah, that's true. We've never seen a fully it's not quite autonomous.
No.
But a fully zero
controlled.
Actor. Because, well, the thing about it is this. Yeah. You would go to a secret, it was structured a bit like a museum.
Right.
In that you would do the first room, they gave you the plot, which is basically this uncle dude from the family was a crazy inventor type.
Yeah.
Always making stupid things. A bit like an Ernest P. Worrell / inventor type. It was
exactly.
It was a bit weird. So you go to the sequence and you'd see the dummies thing, and then you said, push for the scene. And you push a button and the scene would start up, and then something would happen that would scare you at the very end, and you move on to the next one and go from A to B to C to D and like that.
Right.
And do all the rooms that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, very unique idea. I would not say it really was effective. This definitely falls under maybe not good.
Yeah.
But very interesting.
Yeah, I'm not saying that it was good. I'm just saying that it was interesting.
It was pretty cool. And we went there. We actually went there for the Haunted Hayride they were doing.
Right.
And just happened to run into that as sort of a side attraction.
Yeah, as we were waiting for our chance to go on.
Yeah. Okay, next up, The Bear, the Insanitarium.
Yes.
In Alabama, I believe it was, wasn't it?
Yes.
All right. This one was really interesting because there was a very creepy, disturbing bear.
Yeah.
And not.
Yes.
It was a big bear.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if they still have it because it was a few years ago. We went with HauntCon when they were in Birmingham.
There, yeah.
So, yeah, it was a giant bear. It wasn't a little fluffy teddy bear. You know, it wasn't one of those. It had big gnarly teeth and all sorts of things going on. But the thing was, is that at the end, after it was over, they had them, during season, they had customized bears for sale in their shop.
Including ones like that one.
Including ones like that one. And all of the ones were made by the cast.
So yeah, I have, it's not often you get to see props that are used in a haunt.
Right.
That are custom made for that haunt.
Yeah.
Also available for sale afterward.
Yes, and I wish it were something that was done.
Yeah.
Because I would totally buy it. You know, I've said it before on the podcast. If you have something unique in your gift shop, I will buy from your gift shop.
Yeah. And we've seen some pretty cool gift shops. Netherworld had a really cool gift shop.
Yes.
The Hell's Gate had a really cool one, too. And, you know, these gift shops, what they had in common was they went beyond just t-shirts and koozies and...
Right. Right. And Netherworld had stuff, a lot of stuff with the Netherworld logo on it.
Yeah.
Hell's Gate was more of an oddities and curiosity shop with some Hell's Gate stuff in it.
Yeah.
You know. So that
both were
really
very cool.
Oh, yeah. And I bought stuff from both.
Yeah. I still have my lock from Netherworld.
In fact, I bought a doll from the camp in Atlanta. The camp.
Oh, the Camp Blood.
Camp Blood, thank you. Because there was an actor who made custom dolls there. Custom bloodied up dolls. So,
yeah.
You know, I put my money where my mouth is on these things, and I will actually purchase things if it's unique.
Yeah. And final one, even though we touched on Hell's Gate previously,
yeah.
I'm just going to say we were referencing Statesville. But also, their dollhouse room was super, super unique.
Mm-hmm.
Doll rooms are a thing that have been recurring for a long time. Like, 13th Gate has one.
Yeah.
Tons of other haunts have them. A doll room by itself is not super unique.
Right.
But theirs was really, really very well done. And it was unique in that every doll was customized.
Right. Every doll was customized. There were hundreds of them. You felt like you were the doll walking in the dollhouse.
Yeah.
Because they made the proportions of the walls and everything shorter in that area, or at least it felt that way. And they had a model scale of the haunt as a dollhouse inside the dollhouse that you were in.
So to be clear about this, you're inside a doll... You're looking at a dollhouse of Hell's Gate, well, inside a dollhouse inside Hell's Gate.
Exactly.
This shit just got meta, man.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a very, very unique sequence, and that, like I said, all the dolls are heavily customized, they're all unique, they're not just broken dolls or random bits and bobs.
No.
It's really a museum piece, and I wish I could have spent, like, tons more time in that room.
Which is interesting, because you don't like dolls.
No. But I really wanted to look at the art.
Yeah, so
I don't like dolls, but the art was really, really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah.
Yeah, I kept trying to pick out my favorite.
You would.
Uh-huh.
Well, I think that's all we have. Now, we have tons more of these we came up with. Maybe we'll do another one of these in a few months' time or whatever.
Right.
As the fancy strikes us.
Yeah.
Anything else to add? Any final thoughts?
No.
Well, on that note, everyone, thank you very much for spending the past hour with me. In case you got really drunk and totally forgot what you were doing.
Just with you.
Just me. Screw Krista. She's not important. Look, I'm really tired, guys. Thank you for spending the past hour with us. If you got drunk and forgot what podcast you were listening to, this has been Haunted Weekly, episode 157, talking about unique things that we have seen in haunted houses.
Thank you, Maximus, again for that
wonderful idea. May actually become a recurring series. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
You can catch us at hauntweekly.com. We're also Haunted Weekly on Twitter, Haunted Weekly on Facebook. tinyurl.com/hauntweekly is our YouTube channel where all the previous episodes are available for easy listening. We're also on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, anywhere the finer podcasts are sold or distributed. Until next time, I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And we will see you guys next time.